Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Punish Podcast, the official podcast of punishbacklog.com. I'm David Silbert, your host for today's episode, and I'm joined by an illustrious panel of fellow writers, editors, and gaming aficionados. For today's intro, let's share names, pronouns, and in honor of the release of Star Fox a few weeks back and the inevitable Ocarina of Time remake in a few, hopefully a few weeks, but probably a few months, let's name our favorite video game remake ever.
Hi, I'm Sam. I'm an editor at Punish Backlog, pronouns he, him. And I choose to answer this question by going the best remake, not the best game that has been remade. So I'm thinking about the best gap, the biggest gap between the quality of the original and the quality of the remake. And for me, the obvious answer is Metroid Zero Mission. I think the original Metroid is very much of its time and kind of clunky and awkward. And Metroid Zero Mission is kind of a perfect game. So that's my answer.
Classic Sam coming in with the Metroid. My name is Amanda Tian. I'm an editor and writer here at the Punish Backlog as well. And for my remake, you know, to be honest, I don't think I've played enough original games to like know, like, oh wow, a remake's coming out of them. Like, I even looked up lists of best video game remakes, and I'm like, I don't really know what a lot of these are. So for me, it's hands down Final Fantasy VII Remake, because I totally missed the original when I was, you know, a child, but I knew of Final Fantasy, and I knew of Final Fantasy VII, and I knew that it was like a big deal. And so for me, Remake gave me this opportunity to dive into this beloved franchise. And Kay and David and I, we have a long chat about it on the site if you want to read about my journey. But yeah, that's my top remake for sure.
Gary Wilson, he, him, a writer here at punishbacklog.com. Originally, I was going to say Chrono Trigger, just simply because I think that the GBA release of Chrono Trigger is the things they add at the very least DS, not GBA. The DS release of Chrono Trigger, the things they add are very special and, you know, work very well, especially with the overall joy of it. But I'm actually going to go for one just to hurt David a little bit, which is Persona 3 Portable. If only because it takes the problems that were in the original PS2 release of Persona 3 and makes it playable in that you actually get to control your party members now and not have to hope that Mitsuru does not sit there and just cast Bufu for 20 minutes into a thing that absorbs it.
Hey, hey, my name is Kay, he, him. I'm also a writer at the Punish Backlog. My favorite remake, I think as far as like quality increase and also not like sort of a lot of the time the remake, it like changes things of the original, and then people are like kind of upset and they're like, you're like losing the integrity of this or that and stuff like that. I think Fire Emblem Echoes Shadow of Valentia is like, it's just like the original is so far removed from like modern taste that it like kind of stands alone. The improvements are so like notable compared to something like Shadow of the Colossus, where people are like, the color grading is different, so this is like a completely different artistic vision. Blue Point sucks, or Demon Souls or whatever, you know. So I'll probably go with Shadows of Valentia, though I will shout out HeartGold, SoulSilver, rest in peace, Mark Bowers. He has a job now.
He's a diehard fan of those. Yeah,
he's not dead. He's just unemployed.
And just writes less for us.
Cool. And as I said, I'm David. My favorite remake of all time, I'm right with you, Amanda, Final Fantasy VII. Though for me, it's kind of the opposite reason. It's not like from scratch. It's like just playing that game back in the day, and it's kind of lo-fi visual style at the time, cutting edge, right? But nowadays, seeing all of those moments just blown up in great HD 4K glory is just something that you need to see to believe and love. We will also be joined shortly by fellow writer and Punish Backlog evangelist, if you will, Zach Gullinello, but he's running a little late from work. So once he's on the pod, we will maybe ask him to share. We'll be generous. In any case, thank you all for sharing intros. We got a cool podcast topic coming up. Going to be talking Fantasy Gaming League, a little bit of an update on our end in terms of how folks are doing halfway through the year. And then we'll be getting into our waiver wire, our first waiver wire of two. So stick around. We'll be back after the break. All right. So to start us off, let's do a quick refresher on the rules of fantasy gaming for those who might be listening for the first time or haven't caught all the previous updates that we've done over the past few months and years with the site. We've been doing fantasy gaming for a few years now, several years. And at the top of the year, we all draft a team of games that compete on in terms of Metacritic score. So you draft seven games a person. We have six teams, five games that are in what's considered our active lineup, like you would in fantasy sports, and two that are on our bench. And at the end of the year, the five games in your active roster, the Metacritic scores of all five games get averaged together. And then we take those averages, we stack it up to the competition, and we see who wins. So for the past, starting last year, and someone correct me if I get any of these details wrong, but starting last year, we kicked off our, I called it a dynasty league, but it's actually closer to a keeper league, where at the end of the year, people, your team, you get to select up to two games that weren't scored. So something that got delayed or something that you intentionally picked that was a little farther out, and you can keep that into the next year. So the idea is that there's this interesting kind of risk reward or just balancing act from year to year where you have to decide, okay, am I going to go all in this year and throw all my darts at 2026 games, or am I going to throw, you know, enough darts at 2026 to compete, but then maybe save a few draft picks for 2027 games or even farther out. So we're going to check in. We're two quarters into the year. There's been a lot of interesting movements on the leaderboards, if you will. But we do have a definitive list of standings, and we'll get into that in just a bit. And then afterwards, we'll dive into our waiver wire pickup, where we'll allow folks to drop a game and then pick up a game. But we'll get more into those rules in a second. Anything I missed, y'all, in terms of just rules for the audience? No. Okay, so we're going to go from last place to first, but keep in mind, when we get to the waiver wire, last place isn't too bad, because that actually means you get to go first in the waiver wire. So very much a close race. As I shared before the show privately in our Discord, the margin between first and last place is 5 points, call it. So not too bad. But let's get right into it. So in sixth place, we have Team Gary. Gary is a dead man. I think that's a little dramatic, Gary. We got plenty of time left. You're not a dead man, but you are in last place to start. But the interesting thing with Gary's team is that Gary only has two scored games. So three scored games. One is on your bench. But we'll start there. So in February of this year, Romeo is a Dead Man, thus the title of your team, came out to middling review, 72.
As expected,
but it was a fun play, right? Just in case. And then in April, a game that you liked quite a bit, you reviewed for the site, Replaced, came out, 76. And then in May, game with quite the discourse, but Mixtape, which I don't think anyone really saw doing as well as it did, but in 86, we'll take it, right? And so that gives you a score of 81. And then I should shout out the rest of your lineup for the year, at least as constructed. We've got a bunch of games in September, actually. We've got, I should say, Onimusha Way of the Sword first, September 4th. Then Trails in the Sky, second chapter, September 17th. And then Control Resonant, September 24th. And then farther out, Stranger Than Heaven in January of 2027. So, Gary, I'll hand it over to you. How are you feeling about your team? Biggest surprise, biggest disappointment? What's the mindset going into the second half of the year?
I mean, it certainly is the fact that the scores of the two games that I have scored so far, Mixtape and Replaced, are basically flipped from what I expected. I kind of expected Replaced to be in the upper 80s. I expected Mixtape to maybe land low 80s, high 70s. But instead, hey, it flipped over and here we are. I knew after the draft that I was making a long year play, that it was going to be a long year for me, that I was picking a lot of things that had tenuous, let's call them, release dates. And then just around the time of Fake E3 this year, all of a sudden the stretch of the middle of September became whether or not I will succeed at fantasy this year. Up until, 3 days ago, it was actually from September 17th to September 23rd was the original day for Onimusha, and then September 24th was going to be Control. So it's going to be a real up and down, you know, 7 day period or so. But now I have a little bit more breathing room. I am feeling okay. going to be honest right up front. I am in last place. I have two scored games besides Romeo's a Dead Man, which is existing on my bench and does not count towards my score. But I picked that anyway, just because it was close to my heart and I wanted it. I didn't expect to be in play for the lead at the moment. I kind of knew going into tonight that I would be near last place or near the bottom, just purely based upon not having a lot of things reviewed yet. But I didn't expect the score distribution to look like what it is. So as such, having an early pick, let's say, in the waiver wire, I had to make a choice between having a heart play or a brain play. And we will reveal later on which one I've decided to go with.
Can't wait to find out. Thanks for sharing. So, second to last place, we got fifth in the rankings. We have Team Amanda. People can change. So we'll get into it in a second. I'm looking forward to picking your brain, Amanda. But I know that the mentality heading into this year was having like just tangible games, not these far out, right? We're past the Hades 2 and the Silk Songs of the world. We want tangible stuff in play. And I think, I mean, you've succeeded in that so far. Every one of your games, literally all seven, are scored. So, you know, the math is going to be pretty simple for you in terms of like what gets dropped on a potential waiver wire pickup. But let's walk through the releases. So starting off in February, you had three right off the bat. Oh, sorry, I'm missing one. In January, right off the bat, January 21st, we had TR49, which you reviewed for the site and really enjoyed. That has an 83, settled at an 83 on Metacritic. Then in February, we had the onslaught of releases. We had Reanimal, I believe, the indie horror game from the Little Nightmare folks at an 80. We had Norse Oath of God at a 70. Both of those wisely on the bench, although unfortunately Yakuza Kiwami 3 plus Dark Tides, big swing because those games typically do really well. Settled at a 74, so that was kind of the lowest scoring of your active roster. And then rounding out the other four picks on the other three on the active roster, we have in April, Mouse PI for Hire, which we loved on the site. Donovan gave it a glowing 9.8. Critics settled at an 80. And then Saros from PlayStation Housemark, 87, very respectable score. And then most recently, big win in the form of 007 First Light, 87, came out in May. So you're sitting with some nice players on the team. Walk us through the mindset, Amanda. How are you feeling? And what's the mindset going into the second half?
Yeah, I feel like listening to Gary talk about his strategy, I was like, oh, I did the exact opposite strategy, which is that I was like, I'm going to pick games that are definitely coming out, that maybe even are like seconds away from coming out. And I want to play, and I'm going swinging early and trying to see, get a really good sense of what my team would look like by the time of waiver wire. And so, you know, it's a mixed bag because, you know, if we called the season right now, I've lost, right? And to be fair, not everyone's other games have been scored, but I'm like, oh, that's not, you know, you hate to see it. I think Yakuza Kiwami 3 Dark Ties was surprisingly low, and that was a bummer. I think I also didn't really understand the bench mechanic or the keeper mechanic when realizing I was like, oh, I think my bench is supposed to be games that are coming out in the future, not that are also about to come out. So I think looking at its strategy, I'm looking forward to dropping, obviously, the Yakuza game that's on my team. I got a 74 and then clearing up a space on my bench. Yeah, I think my strategy is still largely the same, which is games that I find personally interesting that I want to play and that at this point in the year, you look ahead at the next 6 months and go, what's coming out? What do I think is actually coming out? What's got a release date versus what is realistic? So, yeah, you know, I'm so proud of some of my boys on my team, less proud of others, and excited to drop those.
Nice. Well, the one thing I'll add, and I meant to say it earlier with Gary too, is that, you know, dropping a game, especially a low game, just, you know, how averages work, is that can be a big swing, right? You drop your lowest game, that's like, what, like 8 points below the average, like that alone can up your score and throw you up the leaderboard. So that's
that
nice.
Can up it. But also, you know, if you pick a game that doesn't come out, then it just turns into a zero. So the risk goes both ways.
But at least with, you know, you can take swings with the first waiver because we will have a second for sure.
True.
That's my guarantee. So, you know, you have a little bit of a floor there. But I forgot to actually say the score. So I think I said Gary's, but Gary's at an 81.0. Amanda's at an 82.2. So as we'll see as we climb up the leaderboard, you know, this is a game of inches. It's still very much anyone's game. So very, very cool to see. And that's what we want heading into, you know, Q3. Moving on. In fourth place with an average of 83.0, so literally just 0.8 higher, we've got Team Zach, Don't F Me Gary. That's a holdover from the last year. I think that's just, you know, evergreen title for you, Zach, right? by the way, welcome, Zach. He joined the call. Zach, real quick, what's your favorite remake of all time?
Good question. I've been thinking about it. I have to put probably Skyward Sword because originally I couldn't even get through like the first quarter of it. And then in the remake, I just mostly hated it, but I finished it. So really huge delta for Skyward Sword, I would say.
So you're saying Skyward Sword on like Switch, like with like without all the motion control stuff?
Oh, yeah. The no motion controls. Get that the hell out of here. It's really the only way to play as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Have to give that a go. But getting to your team, right? So we're getting into the middle of the pack here. I remember you were in the lead for at the beginning of the year. Granted, you had one game scored, but it was a big one, and we'll get to that. So first off, February of this year, Neo 3 came out. Stellar reviews, 86. I think a lot of friends of the site liked it, right? Husband Sam, Amanda, and I'm okay if you eventually still waiting to play it, but I've heard good things.
I have procured Husband Sam's copy of you.
I love it. Now we're going to have to hear it. Maybe that could be the game
exactly.
Diary.
No, it's this game blessed disc in the mail. Yeah.
Yeah, see, who says physical games are dead? Right, Sony?
Not here.
That's one sale that didn't go into Sony's pocket. I love it. anyway, on your bench, Zach, in March, released Super Meat Boy 3D. Smart game to keep on the bench. Only came out to a 71. So I wouldn't say dodged a bullet, but dodged a, you know, kind of a sinker, if you will. And then most recently in June, a game that you've been really enjoying, The Adventures of Elliot, the Millennium Tales, which is a mouthful of a title. but you like it, despite the 80 score from critics. I'm curious, just as a side tangent, do you agree with that Metacritic, or do you feel like it should be higher?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I think, you know, from a lot of the reviews I've read, you know, it's not super innovative necessarily. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's got some Zelda. It's got some Secret of Mana kind of vibes to it. It's very earnest and like heartfelt and just kind of fun and cheerful. And it's got the little RPG. It's got the Octopath 2.5D HD, whatever they call that shit. It's still good. I think we've talked about this in the past, right? Like, 80 is a really solid score. It's a good game. There's not a lot of bad things you can say. It's just not like a masterpiece. So I'm cool with that, but I definitely recommend it. I think if people like that genre, that vibe, it's a no-brainer.
Love it. We do say 80 is a good game. And thankfully for you, Zach, we've got a lot of great games on your team still to come out. So we got some firm release dates for a couple of heavy hitters. So in September, Phantom Blade Zero and Fire Emblem Fortune's Weave, two, you know, hotly anticipated games. And then you got the juggernaut. In November, you got Grand Theft Auto 6. That's sitting on the bench. I don't really know why. We get it. Could get delayed. Probably not gonna at this point. Pre-orders are out. Looking like a lock here. And then you also have Witchbrook, which is a game that I'm super excited about. That's on the TBD. Who knows if that's 2026, still 2027. But nice little lineup here. Curious, what are your thoughts on the team so far? I don't know if you heard earlier, but biggest surprise, biggest disappointment. How are you feeling going into the second half of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was a little surprised Elliot didn't do well. It seemed like an interesting game that, you know, like I said, I really like. So that's considered a surprise and also a disappointment. But honestly, the strategy is just I wanted, you know, I got Grand Theft Auto sitting there and I just want to hit some doubles. You know, I feel like that can really carry me if I just don't screw up the rest of the lineup, hit some solid doubles, no home runs. Maybe I'm playing it safe, but last year, you know, I picked something that didn't even get a score. So that really tanked me. Taking the risk didn't pay off. I kind of had to throw a Hail Mary at that point. So it is what it is. But I think being somewhat conservative, hoping GTA 6 carries me, get some things with release dates, maybe get some stuff out that I can drop later, that kind of thing. I think I'm in good shape. I'm not going to say I'm getting too cocky, but I feel like I'm okay. I got a shot at this thing.
Nice.
I'm just saying, Zach, the offer's still on the table if you want to give me Grand Theft Auto 6 for Paul George and a couple of picks. just think about it. Just think about it. You're not getting a better offer than that. The advanced stats are not good.
Yeah, I need it to be Gary's pick if it's 1 through 8, and then Amanda's pick.
1.01, baby. 1.01.
Yeah. Before I relinquish the microphone, might I just add one thing? And that is that it's a real shame that this is an audio-only format, because Gary's mustache right now is absolutely glorious, and it's just too bad that people listening at home aren't witnessing the absolute pleasure it is to look at Gary's face and mustache today, July 9th, 2026. I'd just like to let the record show that I am enjoying it greatly. So there you go.
I shaved and cleaned it up just for you today, bud.
That's so sweet.
Better move on.
Here I thought Zach was going to go on like a 10-minute diatribe about Jaylen Brown being traded away.
We'll save that if you wanted.
We'll save that for later. Speaking to our resident basketball hopeful, we got Knicks champion, Knicks fan, the man, the myth, the legend, Team Sam. From Dusk Bloods till Tokon, which is my favorite name of the group. It's very good.
I'm very proud of that name.
It's a good one. It's a good one. I hope you don't drop Tokon. I hope you play it and feel proud with it. With an average of 83.3, you're in third place. And again, April, some big games in April, starting off with Vampire Crawlers for you. You had 82 there. Pragmata, which I know you wrote about and liked a lot. 85. And then in May, a game that I nudged you to put into the active lineup, Lego Batman Legacy of the Dark Knight. Alyssa, my partner, she 100% of that, got the platinum. I've been watching her play that all the time. So nice little Arkham Light game. And then most recently, this was on the bench, but Rhythm Heaven Groove, which I am loving this game, 82. And then as for the rest of the lineup, you've got in August, Marvel Tokon, Fighting Souls. Wolverine, the heavy hitter, September 15th, and then more of a TBD for this year, the Dust Bloods from Software. Sam, how are you feeling about the team so far, heading into the latter half of the year?
So I want to start off by pointing out what Zach said about we wish the audience could see us right now. And of course, the bad lighting in my room is making it hard for you all to see that I'm wearing the Knicks championship shirt that they're all wearing.
Nice, yeah. Yeah.
So like, that's why I pulled up my shirt like this and then realized like, man, no one can see
not,
it.
None
so
of us.
I could be wearing a shirt that says anything right now, and you guys would have no idea. Back to the team. So my approach this year has not worked at all. And here's what I mean by that. It's not because my team is doing badly. It's because I thought I was taking a bunch of risks, and the scores do not reflect that at all. This looks like I was playing it super safe. You know, Pragmata, I was like, hey, I'm going to take the one Capcom game this year that is not based in a massive beloved franchise. And it's like 85. That's pretty good. I thought I really like Pragmata. I think that's fair. But like that, I was thinking like this game's either a 70 or a 90, and it's neither. Lego Batman, I thought was like a kind of a swing. Vampire Crawlers, I mean, Vampire Survivors was such a big hit that I thought this could do something like that. I know, Gary, you played this game. I know you liked it, but and I'm excited to play it at some point. I've just been busy, but and then there's Rhythm Heaven, same thing of like, I thought this game could have been a 75 or like an 89 or something, but not quite. So yeah, it's just a funny thing that happens is I it looks like I played it safe when I thought to myself, I'm going for anything here. And that's still kind of true for like Dusk Bloods and Marvel Tokon. Those could, I mean, we'll see if Dusk Bloods comes out this year at all. I'm less confident now than I was when I picked it, but yeah. So I got some big decisions to make. We'll see what people ahead of me do with their picks. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
I'm very excited to see. And I am interested in Dust Bloods because I think, aren't we supposed to have a network test some later this summer? So maybe we'll...
We're supposed to have a lot of things, man.
Yeah. I feel like we're not getting anything this year in any sector, in any element of life. So would not surprise me if we get not a lick of gameplay there, but let's hope. Okay. Moving along. This is where we're getting into the upper echelon, if you will, of the fantasy tiers. I would say these last two teams, not to toot anyone's horn, but a little bit, you know, separation from the pack. But again, still very much anyone's game. And I'm interested to see what this person in particular is going to do, because I consider him my sparring partner in everything when it comes to competition with video games. With an average of 84.8, we've got Team Not David, which is irks me. Team K. Let's walk through the game so far. So in January, Kay had The Legend of Heroes, Trails Beyond the Horizon, which released to a respectable 84. And then in February, we had Mugenics, which we reviewed on the site and liked quite a bit. And the other critics seemed to reflect that with an 88. Moving on to March, big swing with Crimson Desert, which I wish would have been, I think if a patch version down the line that this might have looked like a different score. But right now, or as is now, 77, doesn't look like it's going to change. And then in May, the big game, but that was like highest floor you could probably imagine, Forza Horizon 6 with a 90. And then as for the rest of K's team, we've got in August, Fields of Mystria releases in 1.0. We reviewed the early access version and loved it. So excited to see what that 1.0 looks like. And then as for the TBDs sitting in the bench for K, we've got The Witcher 4, still a ways out, I think safe to assume. And then Pony Island 2, Panda Circus, which I'm not sure what's going on with that game. But okay, I hand it over to you. What's your thoughts on the team so far heading into the latter half of the year?
Pony Island gets like monthly like updates like on Steam and stuff from like the dev team. So it's definitely like not vaporware or anything, but I am probably looking to drop Crimson Desert, so I'm going to miss, but it had some hype. And then I'm also would like to replace that 84 from Legend of Heroes. So we'll see how it goes. Given as like we're going last in the waiver wire, my strategy is like more, you know, like let's just take some good games, but we'll see how it is. I do have a bit of a strategy, but I don't think I'll divulge it yet. I don't know if it even really qualifies as a strategy. You could also summarize my strategy as draft good games. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to some. I think Fields of Mystery is like pretty safe. It's just a very sort of known product, having been in early access for quite a while. So I'm looking to pick up some interesting things for sure.
Nice. Very nice. And then it feels lonely atop the hill, but with an average of 86.5, we got...
I can't stand you. when you're in fantasy mode, you are unbearable. I'm a detective. It's so annoying. I'm like, oh, David, he's one of the nicest guys. I love working with him. And then
this is where I become an asshole. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh my God.
I feel like I was molded in the darkness. I feel like it was our energy back and forth that really made the villain. I've become the Trey Young of this competition.
Fuck Trey Young.
But Trey Young, Requiem for a Dream, Team David, 86.5. I will get to it, but I got lucky, I'll be honest. In February, this was a strategic play, right? But from the prior year, I had held over Resident Evil Requiem because I, you know, did fairly well last year in fantasy as well. So I had a little bit of wiggle room and I brought over a game that is doing very well as well this year. So no surprises there. And then in February of this year, we had a pair of games. One I picked because I was just hyped for it, and I also got the chance to review it. Demon Tides from Fabraz. Loved the game. Metacritic reflected exactly my thoughts on it, 84. Earlier in the same month, we had Dragon Quest VII Reimagined, which I know, Sam, you enjoyed, 83 there. You know, like, not like the kinds of scores that you're blown away by, but they're solid. And then most recently, May of this year, Mina the Hollower, that was like a total shot in the dark. I really did not expect this game to get a 90. I have gotten very lucky. I'll be the first to admit, between Silk Song and Hades 2 last year and then Mina the Hollower, like, my strategy has been pick indies that are long in development by reputable studios and just pray they come out and score well, because I don't think they're gonna miss. But even I couldn't have seen a 90 for Mina. And then in terms of the rest of the team, it's all distance stuff. We've got Fable, which got delayed to February of next year, but it's a Playground game, so no way I'm punting on that one. Got Intergalactic, the Heretic Prophet from Naughty Dog. Haven't seen anything from that bad boy, but hopefully when it comes out, it's really, really good. And then Slay the Spire. I thought this was going to be a slam dunk. I thought this game was going to come out in 1.0 this year, but early access. And seeing some of the kind of early access reviews from folks, it seems like a lot more of the same. So candidly, I'm probably going to drop it, but we'll see how that shakes. In any case, that's the lineup. And, thanks for dealing with me. We are going to head into the waiver wire portion of this, illustrious podcast episode after a quick break. OK, Okay, we are back. And before we dive into the waiver wire, I'm just going to explain the rules. So I know I heard a little bit earlier, and I just want to make sure that our panelists are also clear on the rules, that the way the waiver works, we're going to be continuing the rules that we did last year for last year's waiver wire. So the way the waiver works is this waiver wire. We have two waiver wires in the year. This one right now in July, and then a second one, which we're aiming for late summer or early fall. And in each waiver wire, you drop up to one game and you replace it with another game, right? There's no two games in the first waiver wire, just one. However, you can choose to defer your pick. So in the case of like Kay or myself near the end of the pick order, we're picking from, you know, worst to first. And if you get to your spot and you're like, geez, there's nothing here, you can, or you're just happy with your team, you can punt, you can defer your pick, and then you'll have two picks in the second waiver. So there's a little bit of optionality as GM of the Boston Celtics, Brad Stevens, head of basketball operations, but also a bit of a buffoon. I still love you, Brad. A little bit of optionality if you decide to punt. But you can
I'm glad you touched base on that, because I thought we were dropping two today.
Yeah, so I want to make sure I heard Kay say that too. I'm like, let's just nip that right in the bud. We're dropping one game. Unless I mess up the rules, and someone let me know if I'm wrong on that, but that's how I believe we've been doing it. You can drop any game, scored or unscored. You can drop it from your active roster. You can drop it from the bench. Doesn't matter. And I think that's about it. Yeah. So if you had a dud or a game got delayed or you just don't want to deal with it, feel free to kick it to the curb. The waiver order is Team Gary first, then Amanda, then Zach, then Sam, then Kay, then myself. Any questions before we head into things? Are we clear now on the... All righty. And I have in our side, you know, prep doc, the big board games, big games coming in 2026. You'll notice I didn't order it. I don't want to give away any hints this time. I think we can work for it. I know everyone's been doing a little bit of wheeling and dealing, a little bit of strategizing. But keep in mind, you can also pick games from 2027 or beyond if you're a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But yeah, let's just get right into it. So, first up, Gary, tell us what you're thinking.
So, as I had alluded to earlier, I expected myself to be in last place and expected to come into this with a slightly different understanding. Because I did not realize the first place team would only be 5 or so points ahead of me. And if I drop replaced right now from my team, I will be in second place. Now, granted, that's with 4 unscored games, but honestly, because we have a second waiver, I'm feeling pretty good about that. And so this is where the big pivot that I don't think anybody is really expecting is going to happen. I'm actually feeling really good about my team. I think by the second waiver, I'll have a slightly more understanding of some things coming out later on in the year as well that I'll be able to flip in. I was considering dropping replaced and, you know, bringing in something else, you know, which will hurt my heart, but it is probably the right thing to do. But I'm not going to do that here at the first waiver wire. In fact, I'm going to drop Romeo as a dead man off my bench. And I'm going to take Final Fantasy VII Revelations and place it immediately onto my bench as a keeper for next year. David is shaking his head because that is exactly what he was planning to do later on.
Damn. Yeah, I was thinking of that too, man.
Oh, I love it. I thought we were all thinking the same thing. Let's go 2026. And I would weave when everyone bobbed and zigged when people zagged. But
so not. I was sitting here all day being like, I'm going to be in last place. I'm going to be super out of it. I'm just going to drop Romeo from my bench. I'm going to grab Final Fantasy VII and move on. And then earlier today, David revealed what the standings actually were. And I realized how close I was. And I had to really have a conversation with myself as to, am I going to really push my chips in right now? Or do I hold? And I decided to hold. I'm going to hold for a little bit. I'm going to reevaluate a little bit closer to the second waiver. But for now, I'm going to take the big swing for next year. I'm going to lock up between Stranger in Heaven and Final Fantasy VII, two things that are probably both first round picks next year, if I had to guess. Stranger in Heaven, it's feeling a little weirder after Fake E3, I would say. But they're not really based around the game. They're mostly based around the vibes around the game, which are, to be fair, rancid.
It's still so, RGG Studio, so yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's still a big thing. It is still looking gameplay-wise amazing. And then at Fake E3 this year, the third part of the Final Fantasy VII Remake Trilogy was announced officially, which means we can now officially pick it up. And I'm going to do just that, place it on my bench, and I'll check in with all of you at the second waiver, where I'll actually be doing some 2026 team tinkering.
I love it. It's a great pick. Can't fault it at all. It's really good. All right. So moving on, Team Amanda. I think this maybe shakes things up a bit. What are you thinking now with the second?
It does. It definitely throws me off. My first question is, when do we think we're going to do the second waiver one?
That's also a very good question. And I was just doing the mental math myself. Yeah. I think we can commit to late August, but we could also. I would open the door to like we could go late September if we want a little bit of wiggle room, because I know there's not a ton coming out in August and September, so unfortunately it's more a play of life.
Excuse me, there's not a ton coming out in September.
That's like half of Gary's team is
that
out.
sorry hold on that's not already picked up, my bad. That's not that I'm looking at our list of stuff.
We got Townfall, we got Blood of Dawnwalker.
Larry so David voice.
What would be a good this, because, and I'm asking because this affects my
talk it through with us, and then I'll try to
Oh, you're not trying to do a bit. Because I didn't really understand the bench and like I just kind of like flubbed it. I can't, once a game is scored on the bench, it can't move on to the team and replace an unscored game. And so I don't have any wiggle room with my bench if I pick a game that isn't that gets delayed. And so I am asking because then I would have to pick a game that is definitely coming out to not like get a zero and totally.
That's a good question to be asking yourself for the second waiver, because I think there should be enough information by then.
This year is also a little bit different compared to last year on timelines, because our first waiver last year was right after the Switch 2 announcement. So it was in early June.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that didn't answer Amanda's question.
Yeah, I would still love to pick an actual day and put it on the calendar, especially because I think like last year, waiver wire number 2, we're going to do it asynchronously, you know, in the Discord chat. We're not going to be doing recording for it. And so we don't have to worry about like, oh, you know, can we all meet that day? But, you know, without giving away too much of my strategy, knowing what games are left on the board at that day would change how I pick now. And knowing who will have what information on their teams would affect where I'm at today. This is a league built around release dates and game scores. So, you know, these dates matter. So I would love to know a hard date here.
I think we should do like one of the first 2 weeks of September, because I think by that point, any of the GTA 6 related shakeups are going to have like basically the chips have fallen where they may.
I'm about September 15th, and that's right on the dot for Wolverine with you, Sam. So I don't know. I think that's fairly.
I think that is more than fair. I think that adds at least one game for basically all of us who still have things to score. Yeah, so I think that's fine.
Cool. The drama. Okay, cool. So we'll do September 15th. Then with that information, I am going to drop Yakuza Kiwami 3, Dark Ties, and I will pick up the Ocarina of Time remake. I don't really have any big swings for the rest of the year. I don't have shit on my bench. I literally have two small indie games that already came out, so people are very excited about it, so I should be too. I know it's one of the greatest games of all time, and I figure the remake can't be that bad. Hopefully, fingers crossed, knock on wood, et cetera, et cetera. But I assumed Gary was going to take it, so.
Love to swerve.
So it threw me off, so, you know, why not? Let's do the thing. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Zach, you're on the clock, my friend. What are we thinking?
Sheesh, 20 minutes just to take the first game on the board. Sitting here, Amanda's talking herself into it, out of it, here and there. I'm like, what are we doing? Thought I had a shot, but I guess not. Cool. Well, I gotta pivot. No, I got Super Meat Boy that's like pretty easy to drop, so just kick that to the curb. I could probably put Witchbrook here on the bench, probably put GTA in the active roster, so it's just a matter of what I want to do. And, you know, I don't know that I feel like this has a high ceiling, but I told you I'm looking for doubles, and I am excited to play this game, which is something I don't always get to say, because I'm much more of a Nintendo Switch loyalist than everyone else, and it's really where I do all my gaming. So I'm going to go with Splatoon Raiders, because I'm very interested just to see what it is. I love Splatoon. I think it's one of the most just fun, just kid-friendly shooters. I mean, it's ridiculous, but like the fluidity of it, I loved the first game. I thought it was unlike anything I'd ever played, and I'm terrible at shooters because I'm bad at the reaction time. I'm bad at the pinpoint aiming. But Splatoon, you just get to spread ink all over. You're just making a mess, and you don't even have to be. It's actually better to be bad at aiming. So I was good at it. It's fun. But I've been craving sort of that first-person, single-player kind of energy, and this is what it promises to deliver. So I'm excited to see. It still looks kind of mission-based. It's probably not like the full adventure mode that I really would love to see with kind of RPG and upgrading your weapons, but who knows? I just think it's fascinating. I'd love to see the direction they're going to take it, and I feel like it's got some sneaky ceiling just because it's unique. And new, and Nintendo hasn't had any smash hits. I feel like people are just hating on some of the recent releases. So, anyways, that's my long-winded pitch. Splatoon Raiders, baby, lock it in. I'd love to see it do well.
I think that's a sneaky pick, especially because it gives you flexibility for that second waiver wire. You can say, okay, didn't do too hot, drop.
That's right. I didn't even mention it. Comes out like next week.
I pre-ordered it to get the $10 off. Still physical. Still physical, still always buying physical. So I hope it's good. Or,
yeah. There you go.
Sam, what we got?
Let's see. I'm going to take another big swing. I'm going to drop Vampire Crawlers. And I'm going to pick The Blood of Dawnwalker.
Yay, good.
Now, for those who might not be familiar, it's an open world fantasy RPG with vampires that was, I think the director of the game also worked on The Witcher 3. It's like a lot of people who worked on The Witcher. So possibly an heir apparent of sorts. Some previews came out recently and they're fairly positive. So yeah, I mean, could this game be Crimson Desert again? Sure. But it could also be, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to beat David's team. What am I talking about, man? All right, keep moving.
I know. What's the point of anything?
Oh, Lord.
I can't even be like, oh, I'm going to think about next year. Let me take Final Fantasy because Gary did that. What am I going to do? Think about 2027, man. Pokemon Winds and Waves. That'll do great. No, but like not Metacritic. So, yeah. All right. I feel something about that pick. We're good.
I love it. Okay.
I didn't expect my Final Fantasy pick to throw everybody off.
I just didn't expect it to go first. I mean, it makes sense. It.
It's the only game on the 2027 big board that is like guaranteed to get a good Metacritic score.
With one other exception. I think there's one other on the 2027 big board that is almost guaranteed.
I think there's two.
It'd be really funny if you guys are not agreeing on which the other one.
No, I said two. I mean, I've got to get one of his. I guarantee you, I'm thinking of one of his.
Well, after the picks are done, reveal it because I have no comment.
we'll see if this theory holds water because Kay's up, and I just have a feeling. I just know Kay too well. He's gonna try to snipe me, and it doesn't make me feel good.
No, I don't think I'm doing anything that's gonna snipe you. I would be very shocked. I'm gonna take No Rest for the Wicked by Moon Studios, who by the Ori team. I do not endorse Thomas Muller's individual statements. But No Rest for the Wicked has been in early access for a while. I'm like slowly leading towards just taking games that have been in early access for a while and are like universally well like played and liked by that player base and hoping they come out. I was looking at a bunch of other ones as well. Like I could have gambled on Path of Exile 2, but No Rest for the Wicked has a loose month-based release date, October 2026, so I will commit to that for now, and I'll drop my lowest scoring game, which is Crimson Desert, and we'll see what happens in our recently decided upon waiver wire to mid-September.
I like it. Yeah, actually, this is a side story, but we got a code for No Rest for the Wicked a while ago, and we didn't my fault, didn't really do the coverage for the early access, but we'll be reviewing it for the launch. And it's a good game. It plays well, so I totally get that. Not gonna lie, I'm looking. There's a lot of as you said, Zach, there are a lot of doubles on the list for 2026. I don't think there's anything really grabbing me out here. And I think I could play real safe. I don't know. I don't even know if it's safe, but I think I've had my fill of Xbox. I don't really want to give them any free publicity by picking Gears of War, E-Day or something. My gut, and this is where I'll reveal it, but I think the two games for next year that I could take now would be like Resident Evil Veronica. I don't know what the sentiment is about the original, but Capcom doesn't miss.
People love Code Veronica.
Or Persona 4 Revival, just because we know 3 Reload did well too. Like, they're pretty safe bets. However, I think I'm looking at the team, and I mean, there's a risk that I just don't hit a fifth game, because there's no way Slay the Spire is coming out and I have two firm future games. So I don't want to get greedy here. I think it's a silly thing to do. So I'm going to hone in on one. I'm just going to, let's take a risk here. I've been hearing some positive buzz this week in some previews of an It Takes Two game style game called Orbitals. And I think I'm going to pick that up. I'm going to kick Slay the Spire 2 to the curb. So, if it's a dud, then Waiver Wire 2, we swing again. But I don't know. It seems pretty cool. Love anime. We just set up the anime chat in the Discord. We're hoping to bring a little more anime coverage. Gary had the excellent Bleach piece. So in an anime mood. So
Orbitals was actually, when I was talking about the head versus my heart play, Orbitals was going to be the heart play.
I love that.
I actually have a lot of strong hopes, and I think that Orbitals is shaping up to be something real special.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Well, that was speedy. That was pretty easy. All right. So as has become customary with the site, we love to talk about what you're playing, what you're watching, what you're reading, what you're listening to, what you're collecting, what you're doing outside, what's going on. There's no format here. Not everyone all at once, but someone talk. Same.
I'll say something. I'll be the brave man to say something.
You're so brave, Sam. You're so brave.
Yeah. It only takes one.
I'm going to talk about something I am playing, because I'm not sure how much I'm going to write about it, just given various things happening. But I have been playing the Star Fox remake, just as we were talking about to start the show. It's fantastic. If you like Star Fox 64, which I do, you will absolutely love this. And the graphics are so incredible. Like, the changes they made with just their color palettes and everything looks so sharp. The multiplayer mode's pretty good. I like the challenge mode they added. It's just like a really, really solid remake. It doesn't reinvent anything, but it adds a little bit more to everything. Especially with like the new voice acting and the new cutscenes. Like, there's a lot more story background. So going through the campaign multiple times, you get, not just different levels you go to, but different conversations, different cutscenes, stuff like that. So highly recommend.
I'm the host. I can't go next. Someone else.
I'll go. It'll be a self-centered plug. I just had a piece come out today as a recording on Mothership. Yay! Everybody's doing cheering motions. Thank you on Mothership, which is awesome site, started by Maddie Myers and Zoe Anna, and they've been really lovely and just fabulous editors. But the piece today was about Sadie Adler, a NPC in Red Dead Redemption 2, which is one of my favorite games of all time. And just like, she's so awesome, and it's a crime that you don't get to play as her at all. And so there's just all these like dumb cowboys doing dumb cowboy stuff, and you're just like, this girl is so cool, like, let me be her. So writing about that. And then I just replayed another game for a piece I'm writing for them, called About the Flame in the Flood, which is an indie survival roguelike game that came out in 2016 that I replay about, once a year usually. And it's fun. It's fun trying to survive on a raft with my dog. And that's what I've been up to.
Yeah. So I've been kicking through one of 2026's highest scoring games so far in Sorrows, finally. really enjoying it. You know, I really like what Housemarque's put together. I might end up writing something for the site on it, as well as a piece that may be coming out probably before you all hear this, so I won't spoil it. But I will say, I think that game is very different from a lot of Housemarque's previous works in that, spoiler alert, I think this game is very easy. I think it is just really, really easy, especially compared.
What?
I know, especially compared to something like even Resogun, I thought was pretty tricky. But on the reading side of things, I've actually been rereading something that I read back in high school, which is The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. Folks who are interested in the golden age of comic books, as well as kind of the intersection of Jewish history with the golden age of comic books, highly recommend it. It is fantastic. It's a little sad, fair warning, because it is set during, you know, the World War II time period. But I cannot recommend it enough.
I've been playing another one of the most highly reviewed games of 2026, Mina the Hollower. I think I've beaten all of the bosses, and I've done most of the collectibles that don't involve just like gathering bones, which is currency, like special bones, which is currency. I've not been enjoying it. I think it's a very bad game. Nothing about it appeals to me, but I've been very intrigued by playing it because, like, there are sometimes when people play a game and I like listen to what people are saying about it, I'm like, these people are idiots. I would never trust these people's opinions with anything. Like, Mixtape is kind of like that. Where I like think these people are just wrong, whereas I think people who like Mina are correct. I think their opinions are correct, but it's so divergent from my experience that I kind of want to like understand it. So I've been playing a lot of Mina, which, like, you know, and it, because it's a game that like engenders like such strong feelings in me, like I didn't write a lot about it for the site when I probably shouldn't have written that much about it for the site, or just like written something separate. But yeah, so I've been like really enjoying not liking.
I mean, how do you top that? Zach, what you got?
So I played a little Mina the Hollower. I also didn't love it. I find it very difficult to the point of frustration. I already mentioned Elliot, and I have to mention Backyard Baseball, but I got to say, I'm so devastated because two nights ago, I've been waiting for July 9th, which is today when we're recording. I've been waiting for this day for months, and I went to PAX, met Big Pablo, met Lindsay Barnett, the CEO of Playground Productions. And then I realized that it doesn't come out on Switch today. It comes out on PC, which I really don't play on PC. So devastating day to be me. I've been waiting for this game. I thought it today was the day. It's not. So someone else is going to have to play it for me and just like live stream or something. I might just go online and watch people play it because I need to know how it is. But I'm waiting for the Switch and we'll see how it goes. Otherwise, I have to give a shout out to Sesame Street. This is where I always plug Kids Corner here because I have a daughter who's watching a lot of TV. She's really very adamant that the TV is hers, unfortunately. But honestly, Sesame Street is such a delight. There's so much crappy kids programming. And to just be watching Cookie Monster eat random shit and do crazy stuff and Elmo be hilarious, like it's truly just as much for me. I'm getting just as much out of it as she is. So just shout out Sesame Street for being the GOAT, for standing the test of time, being like the longest running TV show ever. There's a reason why it's absolutely outstanding. It's like helping her talk more. It's just so awesome and it's the best. So everyone should give it like 30 minutes of your time. You'll just,
that's how I feel. Do you watch Bluey?
Elmo needs to pick sides though.
I knew he was going to pick sides. I literally was going to pick him before Sam says, pick a side, Elmo. On my side, I'm reviewing something else. I've been reviewing actually a long drip feed of games, actually, but they've all been pretty solid. And the latest one, which isn't embargoed, even though it's not out yet, so I can talk about it. It's called The Incident at Galley House. It is the follow-up game from the developers behind The Root Trees Are Dead, which was one of my favorite games of last year. I wrote extensively about it in my end-of-year write-up. And this one, I like it. I don't know if it's quite as good. The Root Trees was about, you have a family line, you have the bulletin board, you're trying to figure out the lineage of this very long and elaborate family. And Incident at Galley House is more like Agatha Christie whodunit, where you're trying to reconstruct scenes. Kind of like TR-49, Amanda, where you're like talking, like, you know, just typing into a terminal and you're just trying to like kind of recreate, like gather evidence and read between the lines and see, okay, this person was in the dining room. Kind of like Clue. these four people were in the dining room and they were talking about this. And that's important because elsewhere across the mansion, five other people were doing this and the piano went off. And that's important because X, Y, Z. So been interesting. It's been scratching my brain in an interesting way, but I don't know. I liked the detective agency of getting to work with my partner huddled around the laptop, you know, just finding like tea, spilling the tea on who cheated on who in a family. I thought that was a little more compelling, but verdict's still out. We'll see. We'll see. In any case,
I have one last thing. All right.
Before Kay says his one last thing.
I just want this. No, go ahead.
Nah, go ahead, Kay. You know what? For you, anything.
I want this crystallized in history that the Celtics won the Jaylen Brown trade and we will revisit this in 9 months.
I don't think so. That was my last thing, is that I'm collecting a lot of sports cards and World Cup and soccer cards and stuff. And, you know, I'm going to treasure those JB cards because I have a lot of VJ Edgecombe. I will say I have a lot of VJ Edgecombe. I'm becoming a Sixers fan for 1 year. Rights to extend if I want to. That is the deal, because I can't bear to look at my.
I was about to say, just jump on at that point. Just jump on the goddamn Knicks bandwagon. Like, don't.
Sure. Yeah.
Of course, you're talking about JB Jalen Brunson, correct? The king of New York, the greatest man alive. That's what you're talking about.
I don't know about that. I mean, I went to school in Philly, so I feel like I have a claim to being a Sixers fan. I can't say the same for the Knicks. My brother was in New York.
I love that you went to where you went to college. You're like, hey, I can embrace these teams. And where I went Why to not? College, where I went to college, I'm like, no, I now curse all
oh,
these
yeah,
teams.
Oh, yeah, wait forever. A second. Hold up. Yeah, wait. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, Boston and New York, it's funny rivalry. But in any case, I think this is great. Look at this. We're about to end under the hour, unless I keep talking. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you to our panelists. I'm excited to see how these teams play out. And as always, you can catch all the written updates, past and present, about fantasy gaming over on punishbacklog.com. So thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye, Gary's mustache.
Hey, everyone. It's David again. Just wanted to take a moment to dedicate today's episode to Bailey, my girlfriend's family dog, my coworker for the past several years, and a forever friend of the Punish Backlog. Often when I've been recording, writing, or just chatting with Sam and Amanda, Bailey's been by my side as my coworker. After 14 and a half years, we recently said goodbye, but I'll always treasure her quiet presence beside this desk. She'll be greatly, greatly missed.
To learn more about today's episode and the writers featured, as well as to find other podcast episodes, video game reviews, op-eds, game diaries, retrospectives, thoughts about upcoming and new releases, fun lists, and much more, visit www.punishbacklog.com. The Punish Podcast is co-hosted by the three editors of the Punish Backlog, David Silbert, Sam Marnelli, and Amanda Tien. That's me. I make the visual graphics for our show, as well as edit the audio, and a big shout out to David, who handles distribution and back-end support. Our theme music is composed by Jason Hulse. Thanks for listening, and happy gaming!